Watching the Oreo. Watching the Oreo. Watching the Oreo. And welcome back to Bird's Eye View. As I like to say, this is your official source for a lack of insight and baseless opinion when it comes to the Orioles. You can find our show at birdseyeviewbaltimore.blogspot.com. You can follow us on Twitter at birdseyeviewball. It's birdseyeviewbal. You can follow Scott at scottblot, and you can follow me at Jake's Babble. Today is March 19th, 2013. This is episode 28. I'm Jake English, and with me is Scott Magnus. And I thought we were going to come back in 2 weeks, which would be a week from now. And
really? It would be a week from now?
Yeah.
That's how 2 weeks works?
I thought that...
See, I got confused. Fortnite, I just figured it was only 1 week.
Yeah, we weren't planning another podcast, or at least I wasn't. But I had something rather unexpected happen over the last weekend in the fact that I got up and got ready for work on Thursday, only to be told, you're not going to work today. We're going to spring training.
What?
Yes. So my wife surprised.
Surprise, by the way.
Thanks. Appreciate that. I love that I looked you straight in the face and said, all right, let's get back together in 2 weeks. And you were like, mm-hmm, yeah,
okay,
whatever.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I went to spring training to go see the birds for 4 days.
It's and a tough
it was,
life.
It was amazing. It was great.
And happy 30th birthday, by the way.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Old man.
Yes. Ever so old. So I got back and I was burned. And I was tired, and I was cold.
Now, did you talk to Brian Roberts about, like, hair tips, or...?
You know, we may have discussed it a little bit.
Okay.
He said, look, now that you're over the hill, kid, I gotta tell you some things. First of all, salt and pepper still works when you don't have a brain injury.
Second of all, watch the hips.
That's right. That's right. He did. He said that exact thing.
Third of all, don't slide into second base. At least head first.
Whatever you do, don't hit yourself with a bat.
Yeah.
But I was so excited that I figured we should get back together, and I should ramble on about my experience, and we should talk a little Orioles baseball, because I'm enthused. I know,
you're eager to get right into it and delve into every single thing of spring training, because we've been talking for, I guess, the last two podcasts about how spring training is absolutely meaningless and worthless, and how much it sucks. And now this episode, we're all going to hear about Jake saying, oh my God, it was amazing!
All right, now listen. Spring training sucks from a distance. But when you're there...
Are you going to serenade me with from awesome. A distance, or...?
There may be harmony.
Okay.
All right, before we get started, let's dip into the drink of the week. Scott, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking Heavy Seas Gold Ale.
All right, a personal favorite. Well done, sir.
Yeah, got to represent a Baltimore brewery.
I am drinking a beverage that I get to not only fruit, but put vegetables in. I'm drinking a gin and tonic with Hendrick's Gin. And if you're not familiar, it's Hendrick's with a CK... I think it's a Scottish gin, and it is delectable. Please go find it in your local store.
It's got a hint of juniper and cucumber in there, so that's why Mr. English has a chunk of cucumber currently in his drink currently.
I'm telling you, it sounds strange, but go ahead, put a slice of cucumber in there. It will really it'll bring out the kick. It's a fine beverage.
You do what you got to do, I guess.
And I didn't have to buy it with embarrassment at my local adult beverage store.
No, you just had to go to the grocery store and buy a single cucumber, which raises all kinds of other questions.
Strangely, that's not odd behavior for me in my grocery store. They know me well. All right, getting out of the awkward, we're going to move right from the drink of the week. I'd like to spend some time giving some thanks and tipping the cap. You may have noticed that we have some music, intro and outro, for the podcast these days. That is actually a song called Watching the Orioles. I know, strange as it may seem. Watching the Orioles by Songs from the Moon. I came across this song on the internet somewhere, and I thought, wow, that'd be kind of cool to use. And I found the web address for the band and reached out to them and said, it would be all right if we used this song. And they got back to us. They were very enthusiastic about it. They took a look at the site and listened to a podcast, and they're like, yeah, we'd love to participate. So a tip of the cap and thanks to John from Songs from the Moon. And it's funny. I asked him, I said, well, what's the deal with this song? Are you guys, you know, Baltimore expats? What's your connection? And he told me, he's like, actually, you know, I was just sitting in my mom's backyard watching the Orioles at a bird feeder and just thought it was cool. And apparently watching the Orioles for him and the guys in the band is a moniker for whatever makes you happy.
Gotcha.
I thought that was cool because watching the Orioles is kind of what makes us happy. So
does make us happy.
John and the rest of the guys from Songs from the Moon, thanks so much. And
you guys can stick with the ornithological birds. We're going to stick with the smiling birds on this side.
That's right. We probably won't see that particular bird at a bird feeder.
Yeah, exactly.
Also in the thanks and tip of the cap department, I wanted to make sure that we mention our friends at baseballpodcasts.net. Rich Baxter from baseballpodcasts.net reached out to us and said, hey, we found your show and we'd like to include you. And basically, it's a directory of podcasts about baseball, and there's a few podcasts on there. We definitely recommend that you go and check those guys out, especially when we're, you know, playing some of the away teams. If you want to get advanced scouting reports, if you will, of what's going on with the other guy's season, you know, go ahead over to baseballpodcasts.net. And I think it's the type of deal where the directory is going to keep growing, so hopefully there'll be more podcasts that will, you know, whet your appetite. And with all these things going on, Scott, there may be a few changes in our parts of the world. What do you think?
You know, we might have to change that intro around with certain things going on with, you know, web introductions and stuff like that, because certain things may be changing in order to start the 2013 season. Consider it, you know, a revitalization of what we did year one. We're going to take it up a notch for year two. And, you know, we ended up in the ALDS for year one. You know, I'm thinking ALCS or World Series, but this with this change of web formatting too. So
are you hinting at a facelift, my friend?
I am hinting at a facelift, yeah. You know. So, you know, it's been really an honor to work with you, Jake, but we're going to have to go out and get someone that has a little bit more talent.
Are you telling me that you need to go in a different direction?
Yeah. As I say, this will be your last podcast because, you know, we can't have this unprofessional attitude anymore.
I'm telling you, I think finding new talent is probably the best way to improve the quality of this podcast. So keep your eyes out for that, for both the facelift and whoever Scott decides to bring on.
I'm thinking Ben McDonald right now.
You know, he did do good work.
Yeah.
He definitely wrestles better than I do.
He does, and he's probably better research too, but anybody is, so.
That's right. I will give him that much credit. All right, so all that good stuff aside, I really want to talk about spring training. I am totally excited to talk about spring training, and it's not even tongue-in-cheek.
All right, get it out of your system. Where do you want to start with?
I want to start with the Sarasota Siesta Key area. I'm actually somewhat familiar with Sarasota and Siesta Key, and it's beautiful. It is absolutely beautiful. Sarasota is a nice little city, and Siesta Key is they say it's the country's number one beach, and it absolutely is. If you ever hear them say Sarasota and her islands, that's because there are these three little keys right off the Gulf Coast there, and it's like pure powdery white sand, like the consistency of flour.
Mm-hmm.
And the beaches are really long, like, you know, there's a whole lot of beach space, and the waves are really low. You know, there's no rough sea because it's really shallow. There are a lot of sandbars and keys and stuff, but so it's really great for just lounging with a drink in your hand and getting sunburned.
That sounds awful.
No, it was amazing.
Sounds absolutely awful to just be sitting on a beach. And you had your kids there with you.
No.
So you had no kids there, and you were sitting on a beach with like 80 degree weather with a drink in your hand with this powdery sand underneath your feet that you could just bask in the sun all day without any interruption. Oh, you did have an interruption though because you had Orioles baseball.
That's true.
That sounds absolutely horrible.
It was terrible. So I will tell you, everyone listening, if you want to go on vacation, baseball aside, Sarasota and Siesta Key is amazing. It's just a wonderful place. But there is an Orioles connection. The ballpark is beautiful. And not with the show notes, but I'll do a photo dump on the site, and you can go ahead and look at my amateur photography. Actually, put it this way. If there's a picture up there that sucks, I took it. If there's a picture up there that's good, my wife took it. That's basically how you can tell the difference.
So she has talent and you don't?
In all areas, yes. The ballpark is beautiful, and the thing is, it's got its own architecture, and, you know, it fits very well in that Florida atmosphere, but it also has so many call-outs to Camden Yards, mm-hmm. that they really did a good job of making it feel like home when you're there to see the birds. First of all the rehab that they did on Camden Yards, that benefited Sarasota because the seats that they swapped out at Camden Yards in the lower bowl went to Sarasota. So the entire stadium is full of the same, you know, green chairs that you know. All the same trim is everywhere. You know, that green kind of lattice work is all over the place. It's phenomenal. It seats, you know, I don't know how many people it seats. Maybe 8,500 people tops. Yeah, that's
about right.
I think we went to a sellout and there was like 8,100. So it's not that many. There are a couple luxury suites, but really everything is so close to the field. It just has a really intimate feel. It was really great. And you know, we have talked about how horrible spring training is, but the way to experience it is in person because the games don't really matter. And, you know, it's hard to get excited. Like, I went to a tie.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, your Friday game was a tie.
But being so close to the players and having that intimate access was really awesome. You know, I think we mentioned on the podcast that I'm not really an autograph guy, but it was really nice being able to go down and talk to the players, to be able to, you know, be close enough to really feel like you were, you know, a part connected. Of what was going on.
Kind of gave you what you missed at FanFest, basically.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up.
No problem.
It was cool. I saw a lot of cool stuff while I was down there. Like I mentioned, I'm not really into autographs, but I did get to see Brady Anderson on the field taking batting practice with the team.
There you go.
Which was kind of cool. I mean, how many vice presidents of baseball operations can still hit one over the fence as Brady Anderson did?
Yeah, but if Nolan Ryan was pitching to him, there's no way he would hit it.
Well, Nolan Ryan might not be an executive for very much
longer. That's true.
He's getting a graceful boot, let's put it that way. The other one that we saw was BJ Surhoff. He was there with the team as an instructor, and we didn't see a lot of him, but he, you know, wandered onto the field, wandered off the field, and, you know, the fans appreciated him being there. So it was a lot of fun. Again, I highly encourage spring training. After poo-pooing it for as long as I did, if you're actually there, it's phenomenal. There's nothing better than seeing real life baseball in March in beautiful weather.
So I'm basically taking note that you really enjoyed the smaller things, the little things that you saw. So it wasn't so much the aspect of what was really going on in the field so much, but just seeing the interactions that were occurring between the players and, you know, the umpires and the fans and stuff like that, and just kind of getting a feel. It was more the ambiance and the smaller details that made it more magical than just, oh, look, who's this minor leaguer that's now pitching for us in the sixth inning?
Exactly. It was, you know,
and that's not seen or heard when you're following spring training. It's the aspect of being there and saying, oh, that's something that I would never even read about in the Baltimore Sun, but I'm able to see it.
With my own eyes.
With your own eyes.
Yeah. And there's something about watching the games that don't matter when you see stuff that doesn't translate well into the box score.
Right.
And it doesn't translate well into anybody's, you know, blog or whatever. You know, little stuff like, you know, did a major leaguer run out a ball, you know, in a double play.
Mm-hmm.
In the middle of March, that kind of crap doesn't really matter.
Right.
But to see somebody actually, you know, charge down the first base line trying to make it, it kind of tells you about where the head of the club
sure.
is. And it was cool. It was really a cool thing to be a part of. I kind of tried to remove my brain while I was there as much as possible, because when I get into a ballpark, I tend to be like 8 years old. And it was kind of nice just to be dropped into the middle of Orioles baseball in the winter.
Right.
So it was a really fun experience. Like I said, I will do a photo dump of some sort onto the blog, and I'm just thrilled to death that I got the opportunity to go. I highly recommend it. It was a good fan experience. It's very fan friendly there.
So who do you have to thank for this?
My wife, 100%.
Okay.
I'll be doing a lot of sucking up, doing a lot of chores. I will be minding my P's and Q's. I will do whatever it takes to be able to go back.
Okay.
She doesn't listen to this show, so I don't have to worry about her actually hearing
so,
that.
So third child's on the way, I'm hearing.
Yeah, not quite. There will be no time to go to spring training if that happens, let me tell you. I did actually have a couple of baseball-related thoughts, if you know.
Oh, besides the aspect of being, oh my God, oh my God?
Yeah, go ahead. Beside that.
Let's hear baseball thoughts from someone that was out there in the field. I mean, I'm surprised they didn't give you a media pass to actually go on the field.
You know, next time I go, I'm going to ask for one.
Okay, you do
I
that.
I will ask about the bird's
I'm sure the Orioles will respond pass. To you, just like they always have with your letters.
Yes, right into the paper basket.
Yes.
The most important, of course, is
The Brian Roberts watch.
The Brian Roberts watch. I got to actually watch Brian Roberts during the Brian Roberts watch.
Wow.
All right, so we saw 1 2/3 game. We saw a game on Friday. We saw until about the 7th inning on Sunday because we had to leave to catch our flight back to Baltimore. But Brian Roberts looked pretty good, I got to be honest. He drove in a run with a single on Friday. He also, you know, did things like stole bases. And it was a mixed bag. I think during the Sunday game, he stole a bag, sliding headfirst in the second.
Right.
And he was out by a mile with his second attempt, which was feet first. So it's kind of interesting to see, you know, is he trying to adapt his game to the new realities of his physical condition?
Right.
And how successful will he be with that? But I got to be honest, he looked okay. I mean, he'll never be 2005 All-Star Brian Roberts again, but...
He's older now, though. He's in his mid-30s, so that's not going to happen. I mean, you're not going to get those years back. So he's just going to have to learn how to play baseball with the age that he's in right now.
And I'm not saying he won't fall apart tomorrow, because he very well could. But he looked a heck of a lot better than what we had at second base last year.
Yeah.
I got to tell you. And it was interesting to see Buck put him in the lineup, both leading off and in the second and in the two-hole. And I think that really has a lot of opportunities.
Right.
For him, you know, if he's going to have a different skill set, you know, maybe the two-hole is really where he's going to be at. I was impressed with Brian Roberts, both offensively and in the field. He had two errant throws while I was there, and I don't want to read too much into, you know, a small sample size.
Right.
He had two errant throws, but he also, you know, completed some double plays, made some strong throws from, you know, the outfield grass, that kind of thing. So he is not as noodle-armed as I am, which is what I was expecting.
That's positive. Now, the most important question I had, since you're down there in person, is, and this is the most key critical thing that you could have picked up from the whole trip regarding Brian Roberts, was his wife there?
All right. I don't want to let you down, but I don't know.
I'm up right now, so don't let me down.
I didn't see her. I did see Chris Davis's wife.
Okay. But it's not Brian Roberts'
wife. The Brian Roberts' wife watch was a failure.
I'm
a complete failure.
Okay. Well, she's probably up in, like, the press suite or something like that, so...
Again, if I had had that pass, yeah, I would have been the first guy there stalking her for you.
Okay. I appreciate that. That's what friends are here for.
I know you'd be impressed.
Well, in terms of the Brian Roberts' watch, I think this week is going to be a key week for us to determine how Brian is doing. This is the first week that he's actually going to go on road trips for spring training.
It's like Groundhog Day. I feel like we just talked about this.
Yeah, well, this is what, you know, Buck has basically come out now and said that he's going to start playing on road trips this week since we're sending a bunch more people home. Well, not home, but to the minor league complex. So I think this is going to tell us a lot on how Brian responds to these trips. I think he'll be fine. It's just, you know, it's a long season. I think we have to all be under the assumption that he's not going to get through the entire season. The question is, who fills in for him when he finally goes down?
And how far can he get us?
Right.
Absolutely. You know how grueling those bus rides to Bradenton can be.
Yeah, exactly. So hopefully Buck broke out the 5-gallon tub of Bengay and we'll get him there perfectly safe and sound.
Here's hoping.
Yeah.
Hopefully the bus driver drives like an old person.
But let's say Brian Roberts does go down. You do have Ryan Flaherty making quite an impression right now in spring training.
He is digging hard.
Yeah, he's making a case for this team right now.
He really is. He hit a home run in the bottom of the ninth.
Bottom of the ninth, I think it was. Yeah.
To tie it. The game on Friday that I saw. You know, and the funny thing was is that he came up to the plate, and I said to my wife, I said, Flaherty's going to hit a home run here, and sure enough, he did it. He's just that locked in,
right?
And you can really see it. He's carrying himself confidently, and I think in interviews you've heard him say things like, you know, I can't really control the roster. All I can control is my, you know, performance and every other cliche that comes right out of the book.
Yeah, he also seems very laid back. I remember reading one quote where he's just like, yeah, I guess I'm doing okay. Yeah, I'm doing okay. But just kind of being like, I really don't know what to think of the whole situation. I'm just going to go out there and play baseball.
And he is playing his face off. I mean, I don't know if you saw that highlight of him throwing the ball from basically, you know, deep left field to throw somebody out.
Yeah.
Playing at the shortstop position. But no, he is doing everything he can to make this club. And I know that Buck appreciates that kind of play, especially because he's a guy that Buck went to go get from another organization.
Right.
You know, I had him making the club on my roster. Of course, who am I as far as an expert is concerned, considering I dropped Wilson Benamy?
That's true.
But I think absolutely if Brian Roberts comes down, goes down, Flaherty should be the next guy up.
I agree with you to, you know, a certain extent. I mean, I think Flaherty's right there. I think it's just the aspect of Flaherty has options. He's got three options now for the team. So I think he can start in the minor leagues. And I think you just basically put him in AAA and say, go get your at-bats. We don't want you riding the pine and knocking your at-bats. Go get some more at-bats and basically get hot and stay hot. And we will be bringing you up later this season. And I think he knows that that's going to be the case. I don't think it's a situation of him going to the minor leagues and saying, well, I'm never going to get a chance again. I think he realizes that his opportunity is going to be here sooner rather than later.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. He probably will start in AAA. And, you know, I hope they can find room for him on this club, because I think he's just doing a bang-up job.
It's only a matter of time. It's only a matter of time before someone goes down and he'll be on this, up on this club. So it could even be like Casilla just doesn't contribute in the way that they thought was going to, and they just basically say, okay, we're going to bring Flaherty back up. And or it's Steve Pierce makes the team to start, and then it's all of a sudden, you know what, Steve Pierce is not really doing anything, and it's May 15th. Pierce, you're gone. We're bringing Flaherty up. He's our utility first baseman, outfielder, and second baseman.
Well, I will say the nice thing about Steve Pierce is that if we do release him, you know that after he gets through three or four other rosters, he'll be back again.
That's right, exactly.
Another thing that I noticed at spring training that I didn't really think about is that it's really hard to evaluate pitching performances down there, especially because at this point, veterans aren't making the trip. They're not making away games.
Right.
So if your pitcher is pitching at home, they're basically playing against scrubs and prospects. Yeah. And I'm not really sure that you're getting a good read about how they're pitching. I mean, maybe Buck and Rick Adair and the, you know, Rick Peterson, the pitching coaches or whatever, are paying attention to things that are just above my head. And that's possible. And maybe they go in with a set of goals. But really, when you're striking out AA players, or if you're pitching, you know, three scoreless against the Red Sox scrub team,
right?
I mean, what are you really gaining as far as
I think you're looking at control, basically, and seeing how your pitches come across the plate. So, for example, if you're looking at your pitch count and you're not getting, you know, a high strike to pitch count, I'm looking at that and saying you really don't know where the heck you're throwing that ball. And as long as you're delivering a constant velocity and you're having, you know, a high strike or getting, you know, a few strikeouts here and there, I think that's a good consideration. You look at some of the pitchers that we've had this, you know, preseason, and Mattis is one that basically has been lights out in terms of delivering dynamic performances where he's got these pitch counts and, you know, 70 to 80% of them are strike. And then I come back to Jake Arrieta and it's more along the lines of like 60% of them are strikes. So that comes back to a command issue. Sure, you're getting guys out and you may have only given up one hit, but man, look how many pitches you took to get there. And I'm looking at later this season where you come in and you say, okay, I pitched five innings. Well, that's great, but the bullpen had to come in for four more innings and work. That killed us at the end of last season. You look at Straub at the end of last season in September, and he basically was just gassed because of how many innings he had to come in and basically work as that setup man.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be really nice to actually have pitchers go into the seventh or eighth inning on a more consistent basis.
You know, I wish I could argue with you, and this would be a much more interesting podcast if I could argue back and we could yell at each other for, you know, 40 minutes, but I mean, you hit the nail on the head.
All right, I'm right. Let's move on to the next topic.
The other thing is that Wei and Chen just pitched a game, a minor league game, in the Twin Lakes facility. And he said that it really wasn't that productive an outing because the minor leaguers swing at everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if he's trying to work on his setup pitches or if he's trying to work on his off stuff.
Yeah, nibble at the plate. Chen's all about a nibbler, basically.
Right. He's getting these guys with pitches, you know, right down the middle or, you know, throwing it way out of the zone. He said, you know, these guys are hackers. It really doesn't do me any good.
Right.
So I guess I'm in awe of the process, you know?
Right. I think that just shows you how bad it is when your ball and strike counts vary. I mean, they should be really high compared to what you normally are. If they're 50-50 or 60-40, I think it's a really bad indication that you don't have control over your pitches.
See, I think you're just trying to discredit me as far as picking Jake Arrieta for the rotation.
It's a double-edged sword, yeah. I mean, that's one reason also why I'm going that way, but...
All right, so now that we talk about the fifth spot for the rotation, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Bryan Mattis is still pitching like a starter for us down there, right?
Yeah, he is.
Is there a chance he might make the rotation?
I think there may be, actually.
You said it last week, and I thought you were crazy. And then I saw that was it today?
Yeah.
He pitched another, I think it was 5 innings, 1-run ball.
Yeah.
Look, I've been fooled by Mattis before, so I'm not going to go out there and say that he's going to be great. Or right. That he's figured it out. But they're still giving him the innings.
Yep.
And there's a chance. Maybe this is them trying to sneak McFarland onto the team.
Buck wanted to have another left-hander in there. I think there's a really good chance that Mattis starts as your fifth pitcher. And, you know, you still have options with bringing Arrieta up. You can even bring Britton up at a later date, too. I think they basically say, we're going to take a chance with McFarland, throw him onto the opening day roster, and see how long we can ride the pine with him. Because if you're able to carry Kevin Grigg on your roster for, you know, 6 months, I think that we can get by with hiding TJ McFarland if we really think that he actually has some worth.
You did it again.
Yeah, I know I did.
You did it again.
Yeah, I know.
There's no reason to bring the protester in.
Yeah, there's always a reason to bring him in. But I think, you know, I think I said Zach Britton was going to be the fifth starter. I'm starting to be more and more convinced that Bryan Mattis is going to be our fifth starter and TJ McFarland gets put into the bullpen.
Yeah. A week ago, 2 weeks ago, I would have called you crazy.
Yeah.
I can't do it.
Yeah.
I can't do it. I will say that, again, very small sample size. I saw TJ McFarland throw, I think it was 2 innings, and was not, he didn't have it going on.
No, but if you're basically saying we are willing to make this a project, and we think this guy has enough to offer in terms of roster depth, and you're basically going to bring him up in mop-up duties and stuff like that. And also, you know, he's a left-hander, so you could bring him in as a situational left-hander, too, in certain situations.
Get him in and get him out
and just say, okay, you're getting major league experience. If Duquette thinks that he has the opportunity to be of some value to this team, I think they just say, let's risk it. What's the worst thing that could happen? They just release him, and he goes back to the Indians organization.
Right. Or again, like we talked about last week, they could work out a deal for him.
Highly doubtful since the Indians are trying to rebuild with young pitchers, but...
No, I think that the Indians are trying to buy the bats and... Wait, I've heard this before. How did that work out?
Grow the pitchers, buy the bats?
Yeah.
Well, they're trying to grow the pitchers, so they would love to get one of their young pitchers back. All right, so let's go on to our other segment, which is the medical wing.
The medical wing. I saw Nick Markakis with my own eyes.
Yeah.
He was upright and walking.
Yeah. Could he move his neck back and forth?
You know, he wasn't moving very fast.
Okay.
They said that Nick Markakis is down to just soreness in his neck, whatever that means. I don't even know what to make of it at this point. I'm starting to doubt that he's going to be available for opening day. I'm really getting to the point where I'm thinking this is going to be the type of thing that lingers on, and he's going to be a DL candidate for opening day.
Yeah.
No, I'm not trying to be Chicken Little.
Right.
This is one of those things that kind of snowballs. You know what I mean? You hear about it, and you're like, oh, it's no big deal. And then by the time opening day rolls around, you're like, what?
Yeah, my opinion on it is we still have 2 weeks until, you know, the season starts. Part of me says don't rush it back because it's a long season. But other part of me says I want to see him in the opening day lineup. We've got plenty of outfielders on this team right now.
It's true.
There's no reason to bring a Russian back. So if they even have a hesitant notion that he could be slightly injured, put him on the DL to start the season because you've got plenty of outfielders on this team right now that you might have to basically release. Put him on the 25-man roster, and then when Markakis is available and come back, then...
Try to sneak them through.
Or if you get somebody else hurt, then you can basically keep them on your 25-man roster.
Yeah. I mean, it's nice. It's a nice problem to have.
Yeah.
And again, you know, maybe this is the type of thing where after losing Markakis for a portion of the 2012 season, you know, Buck and Dan said, hey, what do we look like in the outfield depth department if that happens again? And, you know, I don't want to give them too much credit, but...
They did go out and get a lot of outfield depth for the spring training. People kept saying, why do we need the outfield depth? We're going to get Reimold and we're going to have McLeod. We really don't need any more outfielders. Well... Based off the aspect of having Chris Davis play in the field for you last year, you kind of need more outfielders.
Yeah. All right, so that's it for me and spring training. Just let me gush again and say go. If you have the opportunity, go. If you're on the fence, go. If there's a question, just go.
Well, I mean, while you were gone, though, you know, Kingdom of the Netherlands, they fell in the World Baseball Classic.
What?
Yeah. They
what?
Fell. I'm sorry. They fell.
My Kingdom of the Netherlands.
Yeah. To who? The Nazis, but just laid down, basically.
Yeah. Operation Sea Lion.
Yeah, pretty much.
So who beat them? Was it the Dominican?
Yeah, I think it was the Dominican, yeah.
Okay, so the World Baseball Classic final is the Dominican and Puerto Rico?
Yeah. And Puerto Rico's already lost to Dominican multiple times, so it looks like the Dominican's going to win, which is really not that big of a surprise, but...
Yawn.
Okay, so the Netherlands goes out, and you're just like, I'm done.
Yeah, forget that.
The U.S. is done, and you're just like, forget it. But it's more about the Netherlands.
The Dutch was, like, all I had left. They were my last bit
you
of
and
respect.
Your goddamn love for the Dutch.
It's, I can't explain it. It's a low country. I'm drawn to it.
It's a shitty country, that's what it is.
Hey, don't you speak ill of the Kingdom of the Netherlands.
It's a shitty country. Constitutional monarchy, my ass.
So there's nothing good left about the World Baseball Classic.
No, not really. And, you know, it really leaves the question of, we've had this in 2006, 2009, and 2013. Big deal, so what, who cares? Why are we still doing it?
We obviously don't care. I would be curious to see how it's doing in the rest of the world. And how are we judging success? And I guess it's not us, but it's the... Who's behind the World Baseball Classic? It's like the International Baseball Foundation or something. It's this crazy organization I've never heard of. But how do they gauge success? Is it, you know, the engagement of baseball in those areas that we talked about where it doesn't really have a strong foothold? Is it ratings in other countries besides the U.S.? I don't even know what we're trying to do.
In my head, it's, okay... We want to have an international competition for baseball since baseball is no longer in the Olympics.
Okay.
We're going to have the World Baseball Classic. So I think as soon as baseball is reintroduced back into the Olympics, I think the World Baseball Classic is going to be continuing.
Okay, but American dollars don't care about it.
No.
And what I'm saying is that, you know,
the fact that
not...
we were charging $5 right. in order to get into these games and they didn't even sell out.
Right. Nobody here cares about it.
Right.
So what is our measure of success? And I don't even know... I don't know how we stopped this tournament from being the NIT of baseball. It's like, oh, okay, cool. I guess there's a game. Who's playing again? Who cares? That's exactly what it is. It's the NIT of baseball.
Yeah, there's got to be something that makes it worthwhile besides country pride.
I guess we're just not a very proud people.
No, we're not.
Unless we're from the
Kingdom
of the Netherlands.
Right, if we were a kingdom, you know, we'd be... perfectly proud, but you know, we're a republic, so republics are never proud.
Do you think they hand out citizenship, Kingdom of the Netherlands?
You probably have to be born into it or something like that.
Yeah. Missed out.
Yeah, you did.
It's not fair.
Well, go buy a wooden shoe. That'll cheer you up.
All right, I'll look for that on eBay.
All right.
Last thing I wanted to talk tonight about was this looming schedule conflict between Major League Baseball and the NFL regarding the Ravens' opening game. Historically, the Super Bowl winning team plays that Thursday night game to kick off the season, and everybody gets their warm jollies about the NFL. But we're having a little trouble with that.
Yeah, there was a conflict. And this was actually brought up right after the Ravens won. It was, hey, we normally play on Thursday nights for that opening game, but the Orioles have a game. So I'm assuming... Major League Baseball and the NFL have been talking about this for about a month now, but it basically came out at the NFL owners meeting saying, yeah, we still haven't come to a resolution. We wanted to announce where it was going to be held, but we don't have a resolution yet. So it sounds like Major League Baseball and NFL need to come to some kind of compromise.
Now, you've said repeatedly in there, NFL, MLB.
Yes.
So let's just jump on Angelus when we can. Is this the Orioles' fault?
No.
What? You mean Peter Angelos is not to blame for this situation?
No, it's Major League Baseball. The Orioles have a certain aspect to it because they can have their input, but also the Chicago White Sox that are coming into town have an aspect to it. The Major League Baseball Players Association also has a role in the matter, too. And I'm sure the commissioner's office has a role in it, too, saying, no, we don't want to have to move this game because of just... what's in it for us to do this?
Right. I mean, let's face it. If you take a game from the evening, doesn't matter what day of the week it is. You take an evening game and you put it in the afternoon, you lose revenue.
That's stupid anyway. There's no way you could do it. There's no way. Let's hypothetically say this whole thing that is being suggested of Roger Goodell said, well, we should move to the afternoon. That's dumb as all heck. Look at Ravens fans. Ravens fans for a Sunday game or even a Sunday evening game get down into those parking lots at 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning and they tailgate all day long. So if you're going to have a 1 o'clock game, let's say, that means that your parking lots will open at 11 o'clock for the Orioles game. Does that mean that you're not allowed to tailgate during the day there for the Ravens game? Or do we just close all of lots A, B, and C and basically say it's only open to Ravens fans? There's going to be a huge conflict there. The only way that I see this working is you have to move the games to a different day. I mean, I can't even imagine what light rail would be like, number one. I can't even imagine what traffic would be like in Baltimore with two games going on. Yeah, I know that the Orioles and Ravens have done this before where they've had a game on the same day, but it was different. It was different years. The Orioles were not as popular. I think it's going to be an absolute pandemonium if they decide to do it on the same day. There's two options here. It's the Ravens play on a different night, whether it be Wednesday night or Sunday night are the two options in my head, or the Orioles go to a doubleheader.
Yeah.
Those are the only two options.
You're totally right in the fact that the Orioles and the Ravens on the same day won't work. It simply will not work. First of all, it's
Baltimore City. The infrastructure is not set up for it.
Well, it's not just
they can't
that.
Even pick up trash.
It's true. As a former Baltimore resident, let me tell you that is true.
You're technically still a Baltimore landowner.
I'm a Baltimore taxpayer, yeah. Let's put it that way. But the thing is that the Orioles, I hope, will be in a pennant race at that point. In September, it is plausible, at the very least, to think that the Orioles may still be playing significant ball games. And if you're trying to add to that the opening kickoff game of the NFL season, that's too many big things.
Yeah.
That's too many big things for the same day. If the Orioles were drawing their 10,000 people on a Thursday and the Ravens were, you know, having their regular opening day, okay, you might be on something. But a September game that we hope will mean something, you know, when season tickets are so much more, when casual interest is so much more for the Orioles, plus the pandemonium of opening, forget it. You can't do it. Now, you said, okay, the options are Wednesday or the options are Sunday. The Orioles and the White Sox are both slotted to be in contention for their divisions.
Yes.
And to ask them to play a doubleheader to affect the way that their pitching matchups work out, to affect the off-day situation, you brought in the Players Association, it really is asking a lot. It sounds silly to say, oh, you can't move one of the 162 games. Come on. It really is significant to move that whole day. The other thing is that, like I said, you turn it into a doubleheader, you're losing revenue. You're losing ad revenue from the television and the radio. You're losing actual gate receipts. Because I'm sorry, if you do a day-night doubleheader, a lot of times you can buy one ticket. If you move a game to the afternoon, people won't go. People just do not go to afternoon baseball
games. Here's a simple situation, though, is it could be really simple. We went to a single admission doubleheader in September this year.
Yes, we did.
And what do you say? There's like 25,000 people there. This could be really easily solved by the NFL saying, okay, we really want you guys to move this to be a doubleheader on Saturday. We want you to make it into a single admission game, and we will buy out all the tickets.
Sure.
We will buy whatever is left over, we will buy out the difference. And here's a little extra money on the side because we're making billions upon billions of dollars.
Honestly,
the only aspect that I have concern about outside of the whole money aspect is what happens if there is a storm that comes in that Saturday that you've scheduled this doubleheader? How the hell are you going to have to make up those two games?
Yeah. Now, two games, again, for two teams that are...
I'm never going to play again in Baltimore for the rest of that season either.
And, there's reason to believe that both of them may be in their division race.
Right.
You're 100% correct. And honestly, if it was down between the Orioles and the Ravens by themselves, I think that they could come to some accommodation.
Yeah.
I think there are just too many parties, too much money, and too much ego involved.
I just think it comes back to the simple solution is to play on Wednesday.
And I've heard so many excuses why the NFL won't play on Wednesday. One, because they want to play on Thursday and not Wednesday.
We played on Wednesday last year.
Yes. Two, because Wednesday is Rosh Hashanah? Is that it's a Jewish holiday.
Yeah, it's the Jewish New Year.
Here's a question for you.
Minor holiday.
Oh, I'm not even going
It's a minor holiday.
How many holidays does the NFL already play on?
Oh, sure. They already play on, you know, Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, Thanksgiving, you know, any kind of holiday. They played on Rosh Hashanah last year, by the way.
Absolutely.
They played on Rosh Hashanah last year.
So why now is it suddenly a big deal to play on that? Honestly, because it's the NFL flexing its muscles.
Well, it's NBC going to them and saying, we really want this on Thursday night as opposed to Wednesday night.
Yeah.
So this is, you know, in summary, this is not Peter Angels' fault. This isn't the Ravens' fault. This is the NFL and Major League Baseball fighting over money.
And they have to be careful here. They do have to be careful because I'm hoping that Baltimore will be in the playoffs. So, okay, we have this fight over the NFL opening day. Okay. Becomes October. Suddenly the Orioles have to schedule games in October in Baltimore, and we have the opportunity for conflict again.
Yeah.
Is this going to broil over? You know, and I don't know. Maybe Major League Baseball and the NFL have a pre-existing, you know,
agreement
for what happens with playoff games in cities that have two teams. Maybe that's the case.
Sure.
But I'm saying what they fail to do now as far as goodwill may come back to bite them both. And I think it would be a great disservice to fans of both teams, of both games, if they can't figure this out.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be a compromise somehow.
Cha-ching!
It's just going to be how much money is involved. How much money is going to get involved. It comes back to the whole thing with, like, Masson. When Masson was settled with the Orioles, it was, all right, I was willing to, you know, reconsider my, you know, demands for X percentage of revenue.
You can infringe upon our territorial rights. Well, I'm sorry, how big? How many zeros?
That's right.
All right, I'm listening. Right. I'm listening. All right, my last...
Yes, come right into the kingdom. We'll let you go. We'll let you go to France.
The gates are open. Just walk in.
That's right.
My last question. So we just got fired up about this NFL-MLB scheduling conflict. Is this only news because the tournament hasn't started? And it's March and there's no real sports talk?
Yes.
It's really sad, isn't it? If this happened during a season of sports where people cared about, this would be like back page nonsense.
Well, I mean, that's exactly what it is. It's basically the media has looked at it and said, we don't have any other stories. You know, not to get too off topic, but it's actually very similar to the whole Penn State story that was occurring, which was there was really no other news going on at the time. And they basically, and I'm not saying the Penn State story wasn't of significance, but it was almost overblown to the fact of, oh my god,
there's nothing else to talk about
besides this. And it got really uncomfortable to just to listen to every single day. And it's like, yes, okay, we all realize it was a grave injustice that occurred here and a travesty, and you know, these people deserve to go to jail or have even worse things done to them,
but there's nothing else to talk about.
But it's 6 o'clock in the morning and I don't really want to hear this driving into work. Please talk about something that is sports-related or something that is positive, because I don't want to hear about children being done injustices.
So all we've got to listen to is hockey and NBA and apparently the Orioles and the Ravens fighting it out over who gets to play on Thursday, September 5th.
I gotta say, though, I'm really disappointed with the aspect of how literal coverage there is for the Orioles leading up to this season.
Yeah, and I feel like if anybody says anything national, if anybody says anything at the national level that's even like minorly objectionable as far as not supporting the Orioles, people get all frustrated about it and you know, bent out of shape. But I mean, really, to be honest, they had one good year in 15.
Right.
So,
but that's something that the local stations could be talking about. Like, they could be having these conversations of, you know, the fifth starter or stuff like that. And it doesn't have to be, you know, a constant segment, but there's very little spring training talk at all on radio stations. It's, what are the Ravens doing during free agency? What's going on with the scheduling conflict? What's going on with the NCAA? What's going on with Maryland Terps basketball? Man, let's talk about them getting into the NIT. I mean, really? Really?
Yeah.
Really?
No, I hear you. I certainly, at this time of year, I put both
eyes squarely on the Orioles. I love soccer, but to have a full segment about, you know, the Blast winning.
Did you just say I love soccer?
I do love soccer.
Okay, you give me a hard time about Kingdom of the Netherlands, and you have the audacity to say I love soccer?
Well, the Netherlands suck at soccer, but...
Soccer sucks at soccer.
No, the Netherlands suck at soccer. It's really hard to kick a ball with wooden shoes.
Oh, Lord. I don't even know what we're doing here. The MLB and the NFL will figure this out. And we will
money never, will be exchanged.
And we will never talk about soccer again.
Until I bring it up again. Did you know Kevin Gregg used to play soccer?
I'll bet he did. Did he light himself on fire in that game as well?
Yeah, probably. Probably. Well, I think, hey, I think with that, I think we're going to draw things to a close. Because right. I think, you know, I got to get the blood red face away from the microphone right now. Because I cannot believe the word soccer was mentioned during an Orioles baseball podcast.
You know, I used to know when we were going to come back to recording. But considering that last week I said we were going to do this 2 weeks from... Who the hell knows at this point?
We're going to be back next week because it'll be 1 week before the season. We'll pretty much be drawn down to who's going to be on the 40-man roster, who's going to be on the 25-man roster. And we're going to have a better aspect for how this team is going to structurally look going into next Tuesday. Well, not next Tuesday, but the Tuesday after that. April 2nd, which will be the first day of the Orioles season.
So we'll be getting into business.
Yep. So next week we'll sit down and talk right before the season. Then April 2nd, season starts, and it's going to be a joyous and happy time.
It's a national holiday. Opening day.
Friday will be our national holiday.
No, I literally took off work, and the reason listed was religious holiday.
Yeah. Tuesday is going to be, God, I can't believe we're opening up in this dump.
Yeah. I drove by the dump, by the way, while we were there. We actually flew into Tampa and drove down. I drove by
past it.
The big soup bowl. And yeah. I was like, what is that? Oh.
Oh, Trump Canada.
Yeah. They think that's a baseball stadium.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, but we will be back, and I think after next week, it'll be back to our regular weekly format.
Yep.
Keep your eyes on the site. You may see a few things that are of interest.
Yep.
And
follow the Twitter. You know, there'll be some major announcements. Following on other fan sites, just keep posted on there because we'll be linking the new site up on those as well.
All right, great. Until then, we'll see you soon.
All right, thanks everybody. We'll see you next week.